Johann Sebastian John.
It's so creepy. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cinema Faith Podcast for April 2019. I am your host, Jonathan Butrin, and I'm joined once again by the prophet, Tim Nelson. He was right about Free Solo. He was right about Roma. And now he was right about Mandy, because last year we podcasted on the Nicolas Cage Grindhouse extravaganza, and Tim Nelson predicted this would become a new cult classic. And I have to say, I went to a movie and I saw on a big billboard that it was coming for two nights only, midnight showings. This is officially our generation's Rocky Horror Picture Show, and Tim called it in that podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, what will Tim predict next?
I don't know. I'm afraid of myself. What did I say? I don't even remember.
You said this is just going to be one of those movies for this generation where they just keep bringing it back and people like just smoke weed and go like late at night.
Yes.
That's it.
It's like it's a cult classic movie.
Yeah.
It's about cults.
Right.
And it's a cult classic.
It's a cult classic. Cults. I like that. Yeah.
Yes, it is. It's a cult squared classic. It's like something at Burger King.
I love it.
But anyway, yeah.
Great. So, hey, feel free to go back into our archives and check out our podcast on Mandy, because it might be popping up in a theater near you.
But don't ever watch the movie.
Don't ever watch it. No. Just listen to the podcast and rejoice. All right. So, why don't we do today's weather report? Monday was a beautiful spring day in Milwaukee, and tomorrow it's going to snow. And I still have no idea why we live here.
No.
That's all I have to say about that.
All right. That's good. I left my snow shovel out.
You did?
Yeah,
seriously?
I don't know how much it's going
to
snow.
That's what people have been saying to me today. Is people are like, did you put away your snow shovel? It's coming. What is going
on?
It's April. Yeah.
It's not even like April 1st.
No.
Which
we're deep
kind
into
of funny.
April. Right.
Yeah. We're like almost, it's almost the Ides of April.
Unbelievable.
Beware, in Milwaukee, beware the Ides of April.
Indeed.
Because winter's longer than, I don't know, Julius Caesar's time or something. I don't know.
There you go. All right. Anyway, moving on. Tim, what's new, man? What's up?
Dude.
You got anything for me?
Like what I've been watching or what, like my personal life?
Both. I want to know both. First of all, yes. What have you been doing? Fly fishing, I assume, or dreaming about it.
So
anyway.
It's steelhead season and I have yet to catch one.
What is a steelhead?
That's a great question. That's a lake run or a ocean run rainbow trout, John. They get really big. They nickname them chromers.
Okay.
Or steelies. And I have yet to catch one. So
that's your mission. You would love to catch one.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
And so the river is teeming with fishermen.
Yeah.
And some fish.
Does Milwaukee have plenty of these steelies?
Well, yeah, because they've been planting them over the years. If you drop a steelhead baby into the river, they come back when they're of age to make more babies.
Nice.
So yeah, anyway, so that's been kind of fun.
Okay. And what have you been watching? And you cannot say fly fishing videos this time. You have to...
That's pretty boring.
Sorry.
So I watched some Netflix offerings. One of them is the new Bonnie and Clyde. Did you see that?
Ooh, Kevin Costner, Woody Harrelson. I've not seen it. What is it like? I've heard mixed things about the movie.
Sorry. So it's like kind of fun.
Okay.
A little bit.
I was really interested in the plot, and then the reviews are kind of like, it's kind of boring.
It is. Yeah. I don't think it's necessarily boring. Okay. I think they should have had a weaker actor or two. They're too similar in some ways, these two. I would have even thought like if you could flip the roles, because Costner always gets like the lead role.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why? Harrelson's had better movies, Costner.
He has.
Yeah. So they've got these two guys, and I think it's like they're almost trying to overtake each other in those roles.
Okay.
Harrelson plays kind of the more, in some ways, like a submissive partner. Like, so he's like, doesn't call the shots the other guy does, but they're both kind of, it's a cowboy movie is what it really is.
Okay.
They're the last of the Texas Rangers.
Yeah, nice.
So it's
worth watching. Would you say that? Okay.
It's good. I liked it because I like that kind of stuff, and I like the historical take on everything. And you go, what were these people like? Maybe they were like this. Maybe they weren't. It was all right. They had a lot of star power, and I kind of felt like I had to watch it.
Well, there you go. Kevin Costner, Woody Harrelson, Bonnie and Clyde movie. A lot of people are talking about it. Check it out. I have to report back because on our last podcast, we mentioned Captain Marvel, and we were both kind of down on it because I heard from Dan that it's kind of mediocre, and we were like, blah, 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 right? But I actually saw it with my son over the weekend. I went into it very begrudgingly because the Avengers Endgame is coming out in 2 weeks, and this is important because at the end of the last Avengers movie in the big cliffhanger, Samuel L. Jackson calls Captain Marvel. So you know she's going to play a huge part in this movie. So we had to see it. And I was like, I just went into that theater like, ugh, here we go, doing my homework for the Avengers. But I have to say, I actually really liked Captain Marvel. It is not a bad movie. It is good. And for the first act, it is kind of a drudgery. Like, it's very has a very generic opening, very like generic Marvel tropes in the beginning. But when she eventually crash lands onto Earth and meets up with Samuel L. Jackson, like Nick Fury before he knew aliens existed, and it is really fun from that point forward. And Ben Mendelsohn's a villain, and he's great. So I actually recommend Captain Marvel, and you have to see it before the Avengers comes out. So go see it; you will not regret it. I mean, it's B+. It's not going to change your life, but it's good. So.
I'll regret it, maybe.
You might regret it.
So the Avengers flick that's coming up is called Endgame?
Yes. And that reminds me, I need to ask you live on air, do you want a podcast on it next month?
Oh, I don't know.
Because we podcasted on the first one.
They should have one, the next one that comes out, called Infinity Endgame. Because that's exactly what's going on.
Well, that's what this is. This is the
It's infinity.
The second part.
It never ends.
Infinity as in the movies never
end. It doesn't end.
But how could you not want to see the second half after that huge cliffhanger where all those characters that we love vanished into the mist? Don't you want to see how it resolves?
It's a road trip that never ends.
I heard it's over 3 hours.
It never ends.
You're going to love it.
It was supposed to end last time.
Right. And then it just left us hanging. My son was so appalled. Like, that's it? This can't be.
It's just all lies.
Well, I think we should podcast on it because, you know,
people actually watch that movie.
People watch that movie for one, as compared to the one we're watching today. And the last Avengers podcast we did is actually one of our most popular podcasts downloads wise. So I think people really dug that show. I think we both
they
listened to it.
They like that weird Malthusian take.
Yes. And maybe it's just because it's popular, but I really think that was one of our best shows. For whatever reason, we just, like, the magic was in the air that night. And so we're not going to be able to recreate that, but we should still
mirror this, and we could never ending podcasts on these Marvel movies.
We've got to do it, man. It's the start of the summer. I don't know. If you're really opposed.
Here's why I'm in.
All right.
Because you have been really into the indies,
uh-huh.
And you've been really great about character development.
Yeah.
And you've been really great about, like, trying to have a more balanced approach, even though you really love these films.
I wouldn't say I love them more than indies. I appreciate them in their own right.
But you like them, and that's fine. Yeah. So what I would say is I respect it, and I think you're right. I think people watch it, and so maybe we'll have something to talk about.
All right. Good. It's done. I got him. All right. So
just corner and then ABC. Always be closing.
That's right. Glengarry Glen Ross. Love it. All right. Well, Tim, we, for the first time, are going to review a movie from 2019 today. Cue the music. We are starting the year off right. Yes.
Is that what you wanted?
That's what I wanted. I'll probably add something in better, but yeah, that's fine.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you wanted me to actually cue music. I didn't have any.
Actually, it's nice.
I didn't have any, so I had to make it up right there. Did it sound right? It
sounded perfect.
Okay.
Yes. So we are talking... Can stop now.
Okay.
We are talking about our brand new movie, first one of the year. And Tim, I am happy to report that I think we picked a good one. Now, I have not talked to you at all about this movie, so your thoughts are completely foreign to me. But personally, I'm a huge fan of this movie, and I'm excited to talk about it. But I can't wait to hear what you think. So, yes. He's staring at me. Like, maybe he has a different opinion. I hope he does. Because it's going to be great.
Oh, so
more the music. Yes, good.
No more music. Okay.
All right, so
on the fly.
The movie we are talking about today is called Gloria Bell. That is our topic of discussion today. It is playing in theaters, so let's get into it. All right, so now we did not have a chance to see this together, right? I saw it actually with our mutual friend, Dave McDonald. I saw it with him, and we had a really fun outing together. Dave McDonald is one of our earliest supporters. He has been like a listener of our show from minute one, so I just want to say a shout-out, by the way, to him, because he's great.
What up?
Exactly.
Hey, Dave. I would have made it, but I had to go to this thing.
That's all right. Dave is awesome. He listens to all of our shows, but he's really behind because he's like this completist who listens to 30 podcasts, but he has to listen to all of them. He can't like skip. So he's about four episodes behind on ours.
He's thorough.
Yeah, he's thorough. Exactly. So about October, he's going to be listening to this, and shout out to Dave McDonald. So we love you, Dave.
Dave, all right. You're going to get a lot of shout outs because you're listening to 30 of these at once. So here's another one for you. I'm winking right now, Dave.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Music? So yes, Dave and I had a good time seeing this on Sunday. When did you see it?
I saw it last night.
Last night? You go by yourself?
Alone again.
How was the theater makeup?
Naturally.
Yeah.
How was the theater makeup?
Was there a lot of people there?
So it was like the first day over 70 in Milwaukee like for like 6 months.
Right.
And so there was like a couple who probably had like highly committed to this thing, and then some dude in the front, and then the staff, who I actually knew some of the theater staff.
Okay.
So I was like, is anybody in there? Yeah.
I love it.
Supported my local theater, Times Theater. We'll give them a little shout out. Our church used to meet there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fantastic.
On Bleed Street. Check it out. Got new sound, new chair, new seats.
Hey, it's remodel.
It's a good place. Yeah.
Nice. So let me set the stage before we dive into this thing. Gloria Bell is actually an almost shot-for-shot remake of a Spanish-language movie called Gloria, directed by the same guy. His name is Sebastián Lelio, and he directed Gloria in 2013, and now he's basically remade his own movie for American audiences, and that's what this is, this year's Gloria Bell. And apparently, though, I've not seen the original Gloria, it's basically the two movies are identical. It's just for two different audiences. So let's talk about the plot briefly, and then we will dive right in. So Gloria Bell stars Julianne Moore as Gloria Bell. She's recently divorced. She works at this doll car insurance type job, it would appear, like Geico or something like that.
It looks like she's doing everything there, though. She's managing things and taking calls.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's weird. She's got two grown kids, and I don't know, she's just like searching for meaning, some excitement, something to break up the monotony. So she goes to these dance clubs at night, and that is where she runs into John Turturro's character, Arnold, and they begin a relationship. But the movie really is not primarily a romance. It's not like what happens next, twists and turns. It's really just, here is a fully realized three-dimensional character, Gloria Bell, and we get to watch what makes her tick. We get to watch her ups and downs and twists and turns of her life, and that's really what it's about. It's a character study of this woman, and that's kind of the heartbeat of the movie. What would you, anything you want to add to that?
So would you say that this movie is as plotless as you accuse Roma of being?
This is tough. I would say Roma is a better movie, technically, because it has just so much more going on from a visual standpoint, from a just
better. But that's not the point I'm making.
Yes, but I would say, plot-wise, I enjoyed the flow and the rhythm of Gloria Bell more than Roma.
You felt like the scenes, every scene had a reason.
Exactly.
Okay, all right. Yes. We established that.
Even though I have retroactively had immense respect for Roma, it took a little bit more work for me to get, you know, the enjoy Roma, whereas this one, it was kind of love at first sight for me. It's my kind of a movie. Yeah.
I felt like so far removed from the character, like her experiences are so different than my life.
Uh-huh.
That it was really, in some ways, it felt a little voyeuristic for me to watch, even though it's not real, right?
Yeah.
Because I was like, wow, I do not understand this person's life at all. Mm-hmm. I don't understand their desires. I don't understand like what it's like to be a middle-aged divorced woman who is seeking something, but also is like, in some ways, they allude to throughout the movie, she's teetering in lots of ways.
Yeah.
And so like her job, right? The idea is like, well, my job, I could lose my job at any moment and my benefits are getting, they just tell
people
me
what, around her losing their job. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then, her looks. So the idea is, have you had work done? Mm-hmm. So the idea is that her looks are failing. Her job might fail her.
Relationships are sketchy.
It's like you have to make compromises in order to get just a like dysfunctional relationship. You still have to make compromises.
Uh-huh. Her kids' lives are kind of falling apart. It's like everything. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
She has to give up like trying to manage her kids because it's not her role.
Yep.
So it's like all these identity things she's having to compromise. So her looks, her job, her family, her romantic interests. It's like every little thing that you look at is a compromise of some sort.
And it was hard to relate to, which totally makes sense. But I like what you said about the voyeuristic element, because I really think that's on purpose. And Lelio really does that as kind of the style of the movie, is that you're sort of peering into a life that's being lived, and it feels very real in that sense. And I was actually eavesdropping on a conversation as, you know, the credits are going and I'm just kind of taking in the movie. There was a conversation going on a couple rows in front of me at the theater, and that's what this woman said. It was like, it was so weird, like I was just kind of trapped in her life, you know. And I think that's what it feels like, but I kind of liked it, but I could see how it's kind of uncomfortable too. Yeah. But before we get into major discussions here, I want to talk about Julianne Moore, because Tim, I know that you mentioned that you really love her as an actress. What do you like about her, and is there like a favorite role that you've seen her in?
No, I'm always going to remember her for The Big Lebowski.
she's so bizarre in that movie.
But like comically bizarre, and fits into that like kind of tribute to noir. I love that character.
She's great.
Just over the top, but also like, who else could play it like that? Nobody.
Yep.
And then she's in The Hours. And I thought she was really good in The Hours. Those two really stand out to me.
Okay.
Where I just feel like, oh, those are like, especially The Hours, like that would be a Julianne Moore.
She has a really extensive filmography. It's crazy. Like, she's been making movies for a really long time. She was in The Fugitive from 93.
I had no idea.
I don't even remember what part she plays. Maybe she's the wife that gets killed in the beginning. I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But my first memory of hers was in Jurassic Park 2. I saw that when I was like 12. She is like the co-lead of that with Jeff Goldblum. So that's my earliest memory of her. But yeah, she's been in a ton of stuff. She was in, like you said, Coen Brothers movies. She's also worked with Paul Thomas Anderson in Boogie Nights and Magnolia.
Yep.
Both really good performances there.
Oh, I forgot about Magnolia.
Yeah.
Yeah. That Magnolia always comes up all the time when we're podcasting, but yes.
Yeah. Yeah. She's the wife of that older guy. And she has that really powerful scene in that movie at the pharmacy where she's getting pills for her husband, but people think she's like a drug addict, and she just kind of flips out at this guy. It's like, how dare you judge me? Like, you have no idea what you're talking about, you know? Yeah, I like that. All right, but
gosh, that scene is amazing.
I know. That movie is amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But probably my favorite role of hers going into this one was Still Alice, which came out a few years ago. That's where she suffers from early onset Alzheimer's. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's really powerful. I actually think about that character a lot. Like, it haunts me, probably because I'm really scared I'm going to get Alzheimer's. My grandma had it. But still, like, she really nails that role, and we just see her slowly deteriorate over the course of those 2 hours, and it's really powerful stuff. So that was my favorite role of hers going into this. But I have to say that I think this is the best I've seen her in. You might not agree, but this is the best work I've seen. What do you think?
Yeah, because she could do whatever she wanted. That's how I'm looking at it, right?
Because like, if you're comparing it to smaller roles like the Coen Brothers movie, I mean, this is like, just go, right?
You're not like some kind of device in the story. You are everything.
Everything, yeah.
And you are bigger than your director.
Uh-huh.
And so you can do what you want. Versus if you're working for some director that is, you know, I'm not saying that the director is not any good. Mm-hmm. I think, but it's just, you're at different points in your career.
Yes.
So it's like, she's being given that she can go for it if she wants to.
And she does. It's really good in this. It's an incredible performance. She knocks it out of the park. I think the thing that makes the movie so special, like you're saying, is that everything centers on her. There's nothing to hide behind. The director, Sebastian Lelio, is purposely really subtle, and so he doesn't get in the way a lot. We were just having a conversation before we recorded about Vice, where we felt like Adam McKay really gets into, he inserts himself too much into the plot, his style and stuff, but Sebastian Lelio in this one really doesn't. He is very subtle, and he just lets Julianne Moore do the thing. There's like the illusion of her just sort of living her life. And so she, but still that's harder than it sounds, right? When it's all you, you have nothing to hide behind. And she finds a way to make Gloria interesting when nothing's going on, whether she's just talking about some random scientific fact or whether she's just laying on a bed. She somehow finds a way to make every scene compelling. And I think it's harder than it looks. So yeah, she's really good, man. But I gotta say, I'm honestly confused why this movie is coming out in April, because I feel like her performance is something that could legitimately be an awards contender. Like, I know it's only April and we're really early on this, but I mean, I think she'll at least deserve to be in the discussion, and this is coming out so early, she's just gonna be completely forgotten by the time we get to October, November, you know?
Who?
It's kind of weird. Exactly. So, I don't know. And maybe as a studio, they're like, everything in cinemas is garbage. We're going to release something that's actually good. And so people, maybe we'll make more money that way rather than kind of going up against everything else. I don't know.
But the film itself isn't strong enough for...
Disagree.
The film itself is not strong enough for February, dude.
He's not strong enough to be an Oscar contender? I disagree. I can't wait to talk
about this. The performance is strong.
Yeah.
The film is not.
But the film is the performance. That's the whole point. Here we go. We're going to get into this. Don't worry. But before we do, I want to keep going on this acting, because another character in the movie is John Turturro. And I really like John Turturro. He's like Julianne Moore in that he's been in a ton of stuff. And do you have a favorite John Turturro performance?
Yes.
What is it?
Of course you know what it is.
Oh, is it? It's The Big Lebowski again?
No. He's in Do the Right Thing.
Of course. Yeah. He is in Do the Right
He's
Thing.
He's Sal's son.
Yes.
One of them.
That is really good.
Not the Jesus. I don't like him in that.
You don't like him? You don't like him in that? Because he's really
he's
funny.
Super gross.
It is really gross. He's making, they're making some sort of sequel to it, which I just.
Oh, no.
I know. And
it's
I don't know.
Terrible.
I don't know exactly what it's all about. I need to do further research, but I was on his IMDb page, and the movie that he just completed, he's playing Jesus Quintana. So it's something, an offshoot of that of some sort. I know.
Creepy.
But my favorite role of John Turturro's is in Quiz Show.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. He's really good in that. That's a movie directed by Robert Redford with Ralph Fiennes. If you have not seen that, rent it. It's really good. You won't regret it. But he is incredible in that film.
That's one of those films in the history. Like, you forget how good it is.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, yeah, that exists.
Yeah.
And it really is. If you've never seen it, you're a listener here and you kind of trust us a little bit. Go look that sucker up. I'm sure you can rent it for like $2.99, right?
Oh, totally. Probably $1.99. And it totally stands the test of time. It's a perfect movie.
It is. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah. And Ralph Fiennes is really good in it. If your only association with Ralph Fiennes is like that evil dude in Schindler, you need to see him play a very moral dude who has this kind of moral crisis that he deals with. It's really good. Anyway, sorry.
It's going to mess up tangent. Schindler's List for somebody.
I know.
They're going to like, oh, I've got a little bit of humanity in that man.
That's
he
right.
doesn't just shoot people from a distance and
oh
not think about
gosh.
It.
Yeah. All right. And then a couple of minor roles. Michael Cera plays Gloria's son. I just love Michael Cera. I love his deadpan wit that he brings to like everything he does. And he's so funny in this movie because his wife apparently, or girlfriend probably, has like left him and their baby and got off to the desert or something like that to find herself. And so there's like all these scenes. It's like this recurring joke. There's all these scenes where they're like, where's Rachel? And he's like, I have no idea. This is so funny to me.
He's like George Michael Bluth. That's who he's playing in this film. He's like uber responsible and like always being taken advantage of.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then his girlfriend finally calls. He's like, thank you so much for calling. And she's like totally abandoned them. It's like, it's
right.
Great. Yeah. And then Brad Garrett shows up. That dopey guy from Everybody Loves Raymond who always sounds like he has a cold. He shows up as...
So huge. That man is so huge.
He is. But he's in one of the best scenes of the movie, and I thought he was really good at that, too. So it's all around great acting, and Julianne Moore, of course, leads the way, and we both agree this is a career high. So if you're in it for the acting, you got to see it for that alone. But let's move on to directing. Do you have any experience with Sebastian Lelio before this movie?
Would I? Is there a way I would?
Well, he has made a few movies. So first, he did make A Fantastic Woman, which was nominated for an Oscar, Best Foreign Language Film, about 2 years ago. So I've never seen it. I saw a trailer for it. It looked good. So you've never seen that. And then he made...
I've seen a trailer before.
You saw a trailer for it.
No. I've just seen a trailer before.
You've seen a trailer before. Thank you. Okay.
They're mixed. Some are good. Some are not.
All of them are good. That's the problem. Every trailer draws me in. I'm like, oh, that's going to be great. And then I like read the reviews. I'm like, whoa.
Like Three Billboards, the best trailer
three
ever.
Three Billboards. Oh, remember when we kept seeing the trailer for that.
Like,
every time Tim
ever.
Would look at me like, this is it. This is the one.
And I was so wrong.
I hate that movie.
Anyway. It's okay, John.
I was one of the only ones who didn't
we
like
We should
that.
Hunt it down and kill it.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, wait, no. We shouldn't do that.
So messed
That's
up.
That's what the movie's saying.
So he made that. But then he also made that American movie about 2017 with Rachel Weisz and Rachel Weisz and Rachel McAdams. Yeah, in Disobedience. It was where they form like a relationship together, but they're from this really strict Jewish Orthodox family, and so it's really taboo. And you didn't hear about that? It's based off a book? Ugh, anyway.
Do you see how...
I don't know.
Somebody, you know, in middle school, and maybe you were watching your TV show too late, and you didn't do your homework?
Uh-huh.
That's kind of where I'm at right
well,
now.
Well, that's okay. Look, hey, I've only heard about those movies. I haven't seen any either, so we're totally on the same
I've
page.
I've heard about
we have
movies.
Not, you've heard, we have both not seen any of his other work. That's the bottom line. So this is all we have to go on. And so judging from just this movie, what do you think Sebastian Lelio brings to the film? You've already kind of hinted you don't think he brings enough.
Well, I think he brings like narrative tension, symbolism. Like he does like... A lot of stuff he brings parables. So he talks about the, it's really interesting because there's the hairless cat and then there's who is like, oh, there's something not whole about this cat.
Yes.
This cat's not whole. Right.
Yeah.
And then she's having her hair removed in order to be more attractive.
Yes.
And then the parable of talking about how the lion saves the, saved the world, right?
She says it's from the Bible, but it's like this twisted parable that I've never heard from the Noah story about this lion who like seizes out two cats, right?
Right. So the idea is that there's some that the lion has to change its form in order to save the world in the Noah story because it would be too big to catch the mice. So the idea is like that the heart of the lion is still in this cat, right?
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So connecting that, like, she is the heart. She can save this whole group of people. But she'll never appear like that's what she's doing. But she's so needed. And then the cat is like, has some connection to her too. Like, you know, of course, that's where they're like ripping hair out and then also talking about the cat. So there's all these like, multivalent as far as meaning goes.
Exactly.
So symbolism, meaning, and then like relation, like the playing with the idea of unhealthy, like deeply unhealthy relationships and systems. So like family systems, like within this film, so that you have like people were in patterns that are hurting them. They're unaware or are not able to get out of those patterns, even when they can recognize them, which I think is very much more like real life than like a hero quest, right? Totally. We're unable to get out of our patterns. We're going to do the best we can here.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think from everything you just said, wouldn't you agree that it's not just Julianne Moore, it's not just a good performance? Like, he is bringing some pretty deep thematic elements to it. And from a technical standpoint, I think it's a very well-crafted movie. You've got
shorn cats.
Yeah. Well, not just that.
Body waxing.
You've got music choices, which I think was kind of unconventional at first, but I think it really adds this sort of quirky element that keeps things flowing. So I think the music there, he's got the ringtones of each of the characters kind of become characters in and of themselves. And he actually at one point blends her ringtone in with the score. Did you notice that? Which at that one point where she's trying to ignore the phone call. There's all those little things that I think he brings, but he purposefully keeps it so that it feels like you're just watching this woman. It's kind of a really good balancing act in that way.
I'll give you another example because I'll agree with you on some of these things. So for instance, if you look at like a classic film where you have somebody who falls in love and there's a grand gesture, it'll be to take someone to Paris, right?
Mm-hmm.
He takes her to Las Vegas and it looks like Paris, but it's not the real thing. Like in the background there.
Yeah.
When you first get in the scene, you don't know where they're going. They're
That's really interesting. I thought they were in Europe. I really did at the beginning before when they show up.
Right. And they show like the phony, like the facade of these Vegas hotels. And you can actually see the Eiffel Tower but then when you get like they move the camera and the shot changes and you realize, no, they're not. They're in a version of this that's only 6 hours from LA.
That's right.
And like an hour on a plane, like 45 minutes.
And that's his big move.
And that was his move, right? To show he's serious. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like the cue is this is a fake version of what he should have done.
Hmm.
And you go, does he not have any money? And you go, no, that's not it.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's that he wants to be able, that he's dysfunctional and that he's not able to do the real version. He's not the real version. And she's like, well, I guess I could settle for this. So it's like he's the Las Vegas version of Europe,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think there's like that layering that occurs in this film that I think I'll see it more and more. It's one of these films, if you watch it a bunch, you'll see it.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes
this is going to be your Roma.
Well, it makes it puzzling. It might be. It might be. I agree. Yeah, I might have. I came in kind of cold. It might be.
So we've got great acting. We've got good directing. So what? What do you think thematically makes this movie interesting? I know you've already touched on it a little bit, but go a little deeper. What's your big takeaway after spending 2 hours with Gloria Bell?
The idea that it's better to be alone than to be inauthentic. And so you have this in Roma too. So the abandonment of women by men or men that are not strong enough for the women that they're courting. That's like totally within Roma, right?
Mm-hmm.
Roma is a little stronger because it's like pulling off some pretty significant artistic, historical,
for sure.
Biblical, it's just more powerful.
And it's shot in such a classic way.
Yeah. So there we talked about the Pietà image and all that in Roma. Mm-hmm. This is like abandonment by men too. So you can see like her ex-husband was abandoned her. I wish I was there when you guys were kids. You know, like that kind of talk.
Right.
Then this guy is abandoning her at every turn. And so there's something about her that keeps going to these people that are abandoning her.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, she's like, to the point where like her son is being abandoned too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
and
right.
So about, and her daughter as well got abandoned by the surfer. Like, where is he? Oh, no, he's not going to be here. I got to chase him.
Right, because he's in Sweden and she has to go there.
She has to go to Sweden.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the idea is that she's creating more of these folks that are like being abandoned by the people that are supposed to love them.
And I think she realizes that throughout the course of the movie, we see her and the inner interactions with them. That's really good. I didn't even pick up on that.
Yeah. And so like, not only is she, I mean, it's like, it gets into like the real family system here. Mm-hmm. Not only is she being abandoned and she is picking people that are not up to like their lower, like in some ways their quality level and their commitment level is lower than hers.
Mm-hmm. And this guy that she's trying to have a relationship brings with him all sorts of family baggage on top of everything else that's going on, right? Yeah.
And he can't leave, like, he can't leave his first family. And he's doing, like, this thing where he can't leave them for her. It's kind of twisted. It's all twisted, but it's also more realistic.
Yeah.
Like, when you get to know people, like, nobody's, like, a hero and nobody's a villain. Most of the time, people aren't heroes and villains.
Yes.
So they're not the Ralph Fiennes, and they're also not like some like Captain America either, right?
Right, right.
They're somewhere in between.
That's what I loved about it too. Like, you know, back in the day, they used to call movies a lot life affirming. That was a big term that I remember from when I was
younger.
Dick Cheney
came up with that.
Did he?
Yeah. They used to just be called crap.
Well, I kind of want to reclaim the term because for me, like, I think it's supposed to mean, oh, it makes you feel good about life, you know, like it's a beautiful life.
Life? Or
was that what that one movie with Roberto Benigni? Yeah, yeah, where he was dancing on the chairs and stuff.
But he dies, isn't he?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Right.
He's creating a false
He was like a very giddy, like good soul, celebrate.
Talk like friggin' Mario and Luigi.
That's terrible. Anyway, so that's kind of what life affirming was supposed to mean, is that these movies make you feel good about life. But I think, to me, this is more life affirming because to me the term means more like a piece of art that really gets to the heart of our shared life experience, something that feels authentic, that we can relate to, that is feels deep and profound in a way that isn't pretentious. So like when Gloria meets John Turturro's character, Arnold, for the first time, they're exchanging small talk and Gloria says something like, you know, I have some bad days, I have some good days. And Arnold is like everyone. And that to me is the movie. Like, that is our life. There are days where Gloria is singing at the top of her lungs to a song in the car. And there's days where she's just lying on the floor, like totally checked out because she can't handle it. And I think, like you were saying, there's a lot of where Christian movies go wrong, but also just regular Hollywood folk movies go wrong, is that they present this, you have this character that has this one deep character flaw, and then the whole goal of the movie is to bring him along on this journey, and by the end he's gotten rid of that one character flaw and he lives happily ever after, right? And that is fiction. That is not real life. Gloria Bell is more like, you know what, that stray cat is always gonna show up and you cannot get rid of it, and it doesn't go away by the end of the movie. All you can do is sort of make peace with it by the end of the movie, right?
Yeah.
And so I love that. And so I don't know. I guess from a Christian perspective, we kind of grew up with this illusion that if we just do all the right spiritual things, that we'll sort of turn into these sort of wise sages, and with kind of Jesus by our side, right? And I think, like, even with Jesus by our side, life sucks sometimes. On Tuesday, life sucks sometimes. And then on Thursday, it might be great again. And I feel like that is tapping into something that feels really authentic. And I was listening to this sermon recently, and it was talking about how Jesus embodied both humanity and divinity, right? He was both human, fully human and fully God. And when he ascended, what we might think would have happened is he would have, like, sort of his skin would have blown off or whatever, and he would have gone into his perfect spiritual state and then ascended to heaven. But he actually ascended still as both fully man and fully God, right? He went into heaven as both. And so Jesus didn't come to show us how to be super spiritual. He came with a perfect fusion of the two. And so as we're kind of walking through in the shadow of that, we have this divinity because we're sons and daughters of God, and we also have this full humanity, which comes with a lot of ups and downs. And that to me is the movie. And it really spoke to me in a profound way in its realness and its rawness. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think, like, there is a moral crisis, right, that you see in the film, which is, would I rather be healthy and unfulfilled, or feel or get a false fulfillment, mm-hmm, and be deeply unhealthy
by being something that I'm not supposed to be, right?
You're basically giving up some of your, like, basically giving up a deep identity.
Yes.
in order to be something, to please somebody, but being miserable on the inside. Like, you're not like who you are.
All right. So before we wrap this baby up, Tim, I got a few odds and ends things I want to run past you. Okay. So first of all, if you, if, by the way, spoiler alert, if you want to know absolutely nothing about this movie going into it, as I do usually, you know, you might want to skip ahead a few minutes because I'm going to get into some details. It's not really spoiler because this movie is not about like plot or what happens next. So, but still, there's your warning.
There is. I mean, there is. There's a desire. There's anticipation. Yes. There's tension. And you don't, we don't want to like.
That's right. That's right. I'm not going to go too deep. I just, there are some few things that I've been thinking about since I saw it and I want to hear your take on it. So first of all, what is up with John Turturro's character, Arnold? This guy is like...
He's a weirdo?
He's a weirdo! Yeah. He just like is so... Whenever it gets tough, he just bails. And it's so weird to me. Especially because they presented him... This was Dave McDonald's point, is they presented him as this Marine. And yet he's so passive. Isn't that kind of strange?
It's like when he gets overwhelmed, he leaves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. And he's kind of like the paintball gun, right? Which is kind of like, it's all the simulation. It's like, this is like the real, this is like he's a light version of the real thing.
That's interesting.
So like the paintball gun is like a war game. It's not actual war. And so it's like every, his life is kind of, because he can't fully embrace anything. He's like that.
He's like the paintball gun. Yeah. It's a symbol. Yeah. I love it. And he owns that whole paintball range or whatever, and he even makes this comment that, you know, men just love to play war or whatever, right? Isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
So, he's the guy that he's playing relationship with her. He's trying, but he's not really actually in. Like, the relationship's like a paintball war for him. And so, like, you have these are these little symbols that he tosses to us all the time. So I think, like, as far as the film goes, like I thought his performance was excellent as well.
It was. Yeah.
But yeah, it's just like, he's very thin as a person. Like he's not like giving her anything.
That's right.
He's just taking everything. He does these grand gestures in order to like regain her trust, or I don't know. It's like almost like he gets off on getting her back rather than actually being with her.
Yeah, because whenever he does something that's so obviously terrible that any other guy would be like, I would only do this if I'm totally done, then all of a sudden he's calling again, right? It's just like, dude, what is wrong with you? Like, when you know, Dave was saying, and this is a little bit of a spoiler, but there's so much more that happens between the two of them in their relationship beyond this. But Dave was kind of like, thought it was weird that she went back to him after that first big incident because she was, it seemed like she was done. But I feel like that was okay because there's that one scene with that dancing skeleton marionette in the street, you know, that happens right before she goes back. And I feel like they really honed in on her during that scene to kind of make this point that something about that skeleton really spoke to her in that moment. You know,
she's like feeding death.
Ah,
like, so she like pays death, right? And death is dancing just like she dances. Like that's where she gets her joy.
The way she puts that dollar in the thing.
So
yeah,
it's
yeah,
like
yeah.
She basically was like, it's like worship. So she's like, oh, I want to see, I loved watching death dance. So I'm like, I'll watch it for a little bit. But yeah, I think, yeah, before she like goes on a bender,
before
basically
she goes, yeah,
she kind of like gives into death.
Oh, so you think of it as kind of like settling for when she goes back with him that next time.
Oh, before she goes. Oh, it's not the bender. It's before she goes back with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's like the dance with death. Right. So it's like, you know, this isn't going to end well. You know, this isn't going to go well. You know, and he is a marionette. So somebody's actually pulling his strings, but she's acting like that's not the case. She's like looking at the puppet and talking to the puppet.
Yeah. And like bending and like down, like there's a relationship.
Yeah.
There.
And like most people would be like looking at the puppeteer and then the puppet tricks her. Right.
Like that's right.
Once he gets the money, the puppet gets all weird.
That's another great scene of symbolism. It's so rich. I love it. Come on. You think like average movies have this level of depth?
I'm
to
not
them?
Saying it's like, not a great movie. I'm just saying it's okay. I wasn't like blown away coming out of there going, whoa, this is a changed film. And like, right. Oh, why is this in April? I'm like, no, this is a good April movie.
All right. Point number two, Sean Astin. Did you catch Sean Astin in this film? Samwise Gamgee himself shows up.
He took her on a freaking journey.
Yes. So
some of the way, but he couldn't go to the end apparently.
This is so great. This is like just this random thing where she's in Vegas, Sean Astin shows up, and they have this like one night thing. I don't think he has any lines. And this is what's so weird to me is that like he must have gotten this script, right, in the mail, and he gets the script, and he's like on page, what, like 102, and it's like, oh, so I like don't have any lines. I make out with Julianne Moore, and then I'm gone. Yes. Sign me up, right? What the heck is that? It's so random. I love it, though. I love it.
I was like, Rudy. Sorry.
That's right.
It doesn't, yeah, poor guy is always going to be Samwise and Rudy to me.
Samwise and Rudy. That's
so
right.
Rudy, I mean, like, come on, let's give him a little bit of, I mean, Rudy, okay. I didn't ever think Julianne Moore would have settled for Rudy. Nothing against it. It's just they didn't seem like they're the same type. That's all.
It's true. And then I really like the paintball scene. And I won't give away what happens, but she gets revenge on a certain character. And I'm not ashamed to say that I enjoyed that. I generally consider myself a pacifist, but I don't think that was violent. I think it was making a point in a clever way. Did you like that scene?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think it's morally acceptable behavior?
Sure.
Well, good. I'm glad we're
I don't think it was...
It's not right. Is that violent? Is that permanent damage?
Nobody got hurt.
Right. But it was a good way
So yeah. His children are him, too.
John Turturro's?
Yeah. So, like, just like hers are a reflection of her. You know, Julianne Moore's kids are a reflection of her. Turturro's are a reflection of him.
Yeah.
Which is, like, they cannot function independently, but they also can't function dependently either. It's like they're just in and out all the time. Uh-huh. So it's like they cannot, like, so he's not married or whatever, but he's also not divorced, kind of.
Yep.
And so he's
super weird.
It's like he can't, he's static. He's not static, he's dynamic. And in the sense of like he can't be in one place, he's always like in between. Yeah. It's kind of awful.
Yeah.
But his kids are that way too. They're like not grown-ups, but they're not kids.
It's like what you were saying is that the movie says that the ultimate hell is living inauthentically, and that's like him all the time, that he's never fully...
He's trying to be everything.
Yeah.
But he's also not doing any of it well.
No, right. Yeah. He's causing so much damage along the way. And then lastly, I just want to say I really liked the ending because I was so scared they were going to end it on some random indie sort of thing where she walks through a door and then it closes and it's like, what happened? Who knows? But like, I feel like it was the scene on the dance floor at the end was a perfect microcosm of everything. And it was no words, all visuals. You got that amazing lighting. And I thought it was a beautiful way to end the movie. So...
Doesn't the first scene of the movie start out with the bar and then dancing?
Well, is she in the bar in the first? Yeah, maybe in the first scene she is. I know the credits have the lights of the bar. Yeah.
But then she's in the bar and then she goes and has to find a guy to dance with.
That's right. Yes.
In the final scene, she dances alone.
So good.
And she's okay alone.
Yes.
So she goes and she nobody's trying to be with her. She's with herself and she can like, she's like, is free.
Yeah.
What she loves is dancing, but does she need a partner to dance? Maybe not. So the idea being like maybe it's better to be alone than it is to. So it's just a different perspective than
And she's totally fully herself in that moment. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. She's free.
So I think like theologically, doesn't this challenge like a lot of the really these ideas that like to be a Christian is to like get married?
Yeah,
or like
totally.
To be a Christian is to like you have this certain idea of what it looks like, but maybe that's not the case. Maybe it's just it's okay to be alone.
Mm-hmm. How many women in our evangelical subculture America were told that the highest thing you can be is a housewife and a mother? And that's it. That's your highest calling. And I feel like so many women have had to deconstruct what they were told growing up. And it's like, I never got the chance to be who God actually created me to be. It's like the same thing with preaching, right? God actually gave me these gifts to preach. And now you're saying that that's not for you because you... don't have a penis, to be blunt. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I also think it's like, it's more than, it's this idea that there's an expectation that, I think this isn't just, I think it's anybody, right? So the idea that like, that we will be fulfilled if we can be in a relationship and that being alone, we can't have any, and that being alone that we couldn't have, and alone in the sense of like not in a romantic relationship, that there couldn't be fulfillment in that.
Right, like even secular culture still presents a relationship as the ultimate ideal. Like if you're single, I've got some guy that
What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
And I'm
well,
maybe nothing's wrong with you. Mm-hmm. Maybe you like the most authentic you can live is this way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's never presented as like something, especially in cinema and in the church, mm-hmm. that's not presented as a viable option.
Mm-hmm.
It's always like, oh no, this is the one narrative that we follow.
Yeah. Cool. All right, Tim, final thoughts on Gloria Bell and your letter grade.
Okay, so I'm going to give Gloria Bell a solid B. I'm not going to give it a plus because I'm kind of stingy. Okay. I may come around.
Okay.
Okay, I may come around because I may watch it again, you know, in two yeah. weeks when it's on Amazon.
It'll be on Amazon Prime.
I know I yeah. say that. It just will. Okay, it will. Oh, they'll offer it for like a week for me to buy it for $20 and I'll be like, what? Well, for what? To yeah. show the grandkids?
Along with Green Book.
yeah, exactly. But I will give it a solid B. And the reason, and I really mean this, like I'm not disrespecting Gloria Bell. Mm-hmm. I think it's a better than average film, just like a B would say, right? Mm-hmm. C would be an average.
Yep.
Better than average film. I would probably wait till it came out and rent it instead of I paid like $10 on a weeknight.
Yeah.
It's good to be in my local theater. But I would say, you know, you can wait and rent it. But I think it's a solid B. Great performance by Julianne Moore. Great John Turturro performance. Sean Astin, I don't know how to comment if he didn't.
I love it. It's a highlight.
Greatest
of the movie.
Silent performance since My Left Foot.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, beware.
Rudy.
Man. Beware of guys that look like freaking habits in the casino. I'll tell you.
Where is Frodo?
Yeah. See? Yeah, it never goes good. If Sam is your buddy, it never works out really well, that journey. Right?
I love it.
Yeah. So anyway.
All right. Fair like enough.
It. What did you feel?
I actually, as you probably could tell, liked it a lot more than you. I was really nervous going in because I made the mistake of looking at the audience reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. Don't ever look at the audience reviews. It will lead you astray every time. So their critics love this movie. It's like at 93%, but the audience reviews were terrible. Like everyone was saying, this is pointless. Why would I go spend money on something that has no plot and blah, blah, blah. And then I was really scared.
Rabble.
Yeah, exactly.
Hoi polloi.
So I'm glad I did not listen to them because the critics were right. This is a really good movie. I've only seen like 6 films in 2019, all right? But it is the best one I've seen so far this year. And I know it's not saying much, but I really enjoyed it. And I would not be surprised, this is a bold statement, I would not be surprised if this is on my top 10 at the end of the year. It could be as like a 9 or 10 entry.
All
it
of the films
be.
So far are in your top 10.
Well, I know they are.
They're in
I
your
know.
Top 6.
I'm saying I have the freaking Lego Movie 2 on my top 10 because I've only seen 6 movies, but that's not going to be there at the end of
are
the year.
Are you saying like the Lego 3 movie is on your top 10 right now?
Lego Movie 2, which is actually good. I give that a B. That's
oh,
a good
I always
movie.
Think of the Batman Lego movie as well, being...
But that is not directly a sequel to the actual Lego movie. There's a Lego Movie 2, the second part, is what just came out a few months ago. And it's good.
Is Will Ferrell in the first Lego movie?
Yes.
There's a second Lego
There's
movie?
There's a second Lego movie, and he's in that too. And it is good and is worth watching. However, it is not going to be on my top 10 in December, I promise. But Gloria
you
Bell
hope. You
might.
Hope. It could still be there. It could be a horrible year.
Yes. Last year was so good. This could be like a downer of a year.
He could be nominated.
Yes. It's true. So,
what's up next? What's happening in this next month? What films are there?
Avengers Endgame, like we talked about, is coming out in like 2 weeks.
Yeah,
so
I know
we got
you're
that
very.
Going. But you know
what else?
But you know what? Listen, I was at the theater and I saw a poster. Quentin Tarantino has this movie coming out called Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which is about the Manson murders. Which I know is a little makes me a little squeamish because Tarantino already has Bloodlust, you know, and now he's talking about a subject of like you know deeply graphic violence. But listen. The two leads of the movie, Brad Pitt, Leonardo DiCaprio, in a Quentin Tarantino movie. I'm in. Come on.
It's pretty intense.
I'm sold.
I'm assuming Brad Pitt is Manson.
No. I think they're like cops or something. They look, at least on the poster, they look like they're like cops or trying to figure out what happened. I don't know. He's not Brad Pitt is Marilyn Manson. Actually, that'd be awesome.
Not Marilyn Manson.
I'm not Marilyn Manson.
Charles Manson. Did I say
Marilyn
Manson?
Marilyn Manson ain't my girlfriend.
wow, sorry.
I'm Christendom. Yes, no. So you mean he might be Charles Manson? Is that what it is?
That's what I'm thinking of.
Yes.
Charles Manson. Charlie Manson.
Well, he did not look like it in the poster. I think. I don't know. Who knows? I'm excited. Hateful Eight was problematic in the second half anyway. It was kind of garbage. So I'm hoping it's a return to form for Tarantino, and I will watch Brad Pitt and Leo DiCaprio in anything. So that's something to look forward to. And there's a lot of good movies coming out.
That's in April?
No.
May?
No. That's coming out in like July or June or July.
What?
Yeah. Oh, did you see the new Joker trailer? So Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh, that's a good choice.
Yes. Is playing Joker, but not in a comic book sort of way. In like a
Heath Ledger kind of way?
In like a Heath Ledger, yeah. like a drama, like about a stand-up comedian who slowly loses his mind kind of way. And the trailer is awesome.
Oh. And it's so, not about Louis C.K., huh?
It is not. No, and that comes out in October. Okay. That comes out my birthday month, so that we're definitely podcasting on Joker in October. Anyway, I've gotten ahead of myself. Let me finish my final thoughts on
I'm sorry.
Gloria
I'm sorry.
Bell. It's totally fine.
I got excited for a second there because a lot of times you tell me, John's really good at knowing what's coming out usually.
Yeah.
And I find out from him, and now you guys might be finding out from him. And it's exciting.
There's some exciting stuff coming out of the pike. And Toy Story 4 is coming in June,
too. I just couldn't care less.
Oh, hey.
No, I already couldn't care less. You can't convince me to care more.
All three of those movies are fantastic. All three of them. And 3 was probably the best one. Ugh, whatever.
You're treating it like the Rocky franchise.
What? It's better than the Rocky franchise.
Rocky 3 is weak.
Rocky 4.
Rocky 4 is a good movie.
Drago. Yeah. All right. So, anyway, my final letter grade on Gloria Bell is an A-. And I'm standing by it. I think it is a really good movie. Julianne Moore is fantastic. And I just really loved the illusion of nothing happening, that really subtle filmmaking by Sebastian Lelio. But then you peer underneath the surface and you see all the symbolism that we talked about. And there is so much going on there. So I'm excited. And I'm going to check out the rest of his work. I'm going to look at Fantastic Woman and maybe Disobedience. I don't know. We'll see. Because I like him. So there you go.
I'd watch those movies.
Yeah, totally. So there you go. That is our podcast for April. We will be back next month. If Tim keeps his word, we will be back with an Avengers podcast to start off the summer, May. How about that?
I think that's good.
All right, good.
I'm excited. I'll keep my word.
All right, awesome. So you have that to look forward to. So many questions. Will Thanos be stopped? How does Captain Marvel factor in? I'm excited.
Who cares?
Three.
Apparently a few people.
There it is. All right, good. So, hey, if you have not rated or reviewed our podcast, we would love it and be so appreciative if you would just flip on over to the Apple Podcast app and give us a 5-star rating and a review. And hey, leave a comment on how grateful you are that Tim Nelson is sacrificing himself to see the Avengers Endgame for us, just like he sacrificed his body to see Beale Street for you. You guys need to be appreciative. And if you want to drop us a line.
If Brady Street could talk, he could tell you all about my injuries.
Yes.
Yeah, see?
And if you even want to drop us a line, which we may very well read on our upcoming show, you can email us at podcast@cinemafaith.com. We'd love to hear your comments, and we will read what you write us. So
tell us what the best... I want to hear from some folks. Like, what movie are they looking forward to?
Yes.
If you got some movie that you think that we should review, or maybe you wanted somebody on the staff to review, like, mm-hmm. of the writing staff for the website.
Absolutely.
Like, I'm sure, and it could even be something old. It doesn't have to be upcoming.
100%.
Or something that you think that really should have somebody with a Christian perspective. Like, take a look at this.
Yes.
We'd love to hear it.
Yes.
It doesn't mean that, like, it'll, you know, get reviewed, but it could.
It could.
And it might be, like, you have a great idea, and we want to hear it. We're not just, like... Mm-hmm. talking here and not, we want to listen to what you have to say, right? Am I right? Am I
absolutely
saying this? Okay.
We desperately want to hear from you because look, I understand it. I have all these podcasts that I listen to all the time and I never rate and review them and I never email them even though they tell us to, but I know that like from a podcaster's perspective, how much it would mean to me if someone reached out because it feels like you're just talking into the void. Like we don't know. We know people are listening, but we don't know what they're thinking about, you know? So it would be really helpful.
But we are okay being alone.
Yeah.
We're okay being alone. We don't have to be with someone, the listeners.
Right, because we've learned our lesson.
We've learned that it's all right. Maybe we could be more authentic alone. But if you wanted to rebate and review, that would still be good. And in fact, we would really encourage you to do
Yes, please do so. Thank you for listening, everyone. Check out Gloria Bell while you can. It's playing near you. And until next time, keep the faith, my friends. We will see you next time.